following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Stadium rankings for EA College Football 27. Is Auburn too high, too low, or just right?
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in, welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Happy July, everybody. Holy cow, it feels like the summer is absolutely flying by, at least on my side of things, as we are now, this is halfway through week four of the newly revamped edition of On the Line. And man, we're having a blast here doing so. And appreciate everybody for being a part of it and being a part here this afternoon as well. Another hot day in the Auburn Opelika area. Happy to be inside as we have the TCU basically giant media day on their network.
The takeover day?
Yeah, takeover day. That's the right word for it. As watching a whole lot of TCU SMU right now, for better or for worse.
Just makes you miss college football.
That's
even
basically
more.
just the general consensus of this is our daily fix of college football, because in the middle of talking season right now, in the middle of very slow summer, we are scratching and clawing for anything that we can get. We do have some new news here this afternoon that we are very excited to get to on the recruiting front, because although it's downtime, although it's basically the dead period, Alex Golish and the staff continue to load up names. Auburn gets its 25th commit here this morning. We'll dive into him here in just a little bit, but excited that you're here with us on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. As I mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. You've already heard him here a little bit, but my man Trip Upton in the studio as well. Hopefully all is going well for you. Excited to dive into something that we've wanted to talk about for quite some time, and you feel like now that the month of July is here, you are just 4 or 5 days from this game basically fully being released, much less the pre-sale, much less all of whatever they're trying to do to release even more money from your bank account. Happy payday for those like us out there. So very nice to have. But College Football 27 and the player rankings, the other players that are in the video game and the stadium rankings as well. And taking that more so into if real life works its way as if EA and the creators are expecting the video game to work, then Auburn's in a pretty solid spot.
I think Brandon, our good buddy Brandon,
Mr. Brandon Gurgley, is this flexing Notre Dame?
He's flexing Notre Dame's 89 overall.
Listen, I'm just saying they're going to have to up our rating by the end of the season. Preseason stuff now, but we're going to end up winning.
Was it
the national championship, and they're really going to have to change? We're going to be at 97 overall by the end of the year.
What's the overall ranking right now?
They're fourth, and they're at 89.
89. I think you have to be if you want to get to a 90, you have to be in a conference. So you close that dang door.
The highest overall team ranking is a 91, so we're only two off.
Cool. All right.
Cool.
9-3, take your playoff spot and get out the door.
Hey, Auburn and Notre Dame played in the same bowl game last year. Yeah, Brandon.
Brandon Gurgley.
What a guy.
You've heard him on the radio station quite a few times.
What a guy.
Yes, our good buddy who, for some reason, got lost and found his way in Auburn, Alabama. But no, we are diving into a little bit of that here this afternoon, as well as a lot more to cover in hour number two. We mentioned the recruiting side of things, some NBA free agency news, some NBA trades that we want to get to that fully affect the Auburn brands that are really, really exciting in terms of Mr. Big Walk and the exciting whites that are in Los Angeles. We'll talk more about that. And then also something that we're not too excited to talk about, but it's been too long since we've said their name, and maybe that's the reason for their recent struggles. The Atlanta Braves are in a very painful spot right now. We'll be able to talk about that. Some of the numbers that really make you feel the pain that the other teams in the NL East have felt for a handful of years, because it feels like the Braves are getting a taste of their own medicine. So I guess a very unofficial happy Wednesday to you, sir.
Yes, happy Wednesday. Again, it feels a little bit later in the week. It feels like a Thursday, but as even though my brain is expecting to talk to Chris Gordy and Brad Law today, it'll be a kind of a true free-for-all Wednesday today with no Jordan Hill. But I'm excited. It's going to be a great show today. And if you want to be a part of the show, phone lines will be open the entire 2 hours of today's show, 334-321-1390. Give us a call, or you can give us a text message at the text box, which is always open at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1. OTL.
And we are planning on getting some more guests that we will be very excited for throughout football season. I've been in the works with a couple of guys, and names that will be very, very exciting that you will want to hear from each and every week. And then as well, I don't know exactly what day we want to make it, if we want to make it like a rivalry Wednesday type of deal, since we'll talk with Jordan Hill, if we're going to get with our Alabama guy at 3:30, or possibly just a whoever Auburn is set to play, get a sure special guest for that week, just to kind of give a little bit of a deep dive into what Auburn fans and this Auburn team will see throughout their 2026 season. And so really excited to see what's in the works, but in the middle of talking season, unless we want to call Jordan Hill and just ask him a bunch of hypotheticals on College Football 27 and Kirby Smart's what time he gets his haircut here this afternoon. I don't know if there's too much in the world of college football and Georgia football right now. It's worth getting those guys here right now, but excited to pick back up with them here very shortly again, especially with SEC Media Days this month, which is crazy to think about. Yeah, that in itself shows how fast the summer is moving. We are 19 days from being in Tampa, being able to bring you live, legitimate coverage on every single team over the 4 days throughout the SEC.
Yeah, that'll be crazy. I mean, the way I'm thinking of it, it's two Sundays away until we leave.
Holy cow. We
have this Sunday, which is the fourth weekend. Then you have the next Sunday, the 12th. And then that next Sunday, we're heading to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, the 19th, where we'll check in. We'll make sure that we got everything good to go, make sure that our table and all of our equipment is set up, and be able to bring everything to you live. It's four very, very fun days, four very hardworking days. I mean, it is 8 to 5, if not even longer, in terms of legitimate coverage, making sure that you get every single thing that you can, following around the four teams each day and scheduling interviews, walking around trying to get more interviews. It's a whole lot of fun, a lot of work, but there's nobody else that we'd rather do it for than here on ESPN 106.7. And excited to still be able to bring you that and our live show from 2 to 4 every day, live from Tampa, Florida, for SEC Media Days. Again, the 20th through the 24th, which feels like the official start of the college football season. But we are able to dive into a lot of excitement for the younger generation, as you're just a couple of days from EA College Football 27 being released, and not that we are planning on spending too much time on the new jersey concepts, the new visors, the new face masks, the new routes that are planning on being run, or anything like that. But do want to be able to spend a little time, especially on the Auburn side of things, of diving into some of the player rankings and some of their individual traits for EA College Football 27, and almost translate that to, in a perfect world, if the video game works its way into real life, it sets the Tigers up, and especially a couple of their position groups, for a whole lot of success. success. It sets up Byron Brown for a whole lot of success as well. He's going to be one of the most fun guys to play with in the game, just looking at some of these overalls and statistics. But wanted to dive into that, also take a view outside of Auburn, look at some of the SEC and just all of college football and who they're expecting to be some of the top names in college football this season before we dive into their stadium rankings. And it's something that we've been asked about a couple of times actually in the text box. And so excited to be able to bring you all of that here this afternoon, because we'll tell you where Auburn sits, and some may say it's too high, some may say it's too low, some are just happy that Auburn is in the top 25 based off of what Jordan-Hare Stadium has been from the product on the field, which I don't think that is necessarily the reason for this ranking, but obviously plays a little bit of a factor. And we'll talk about the teams that are way, way, way too high, and the teams that are or the stadiums, rather, that are way too high, and then the stadiums that are a little bit under the radar. And so excited to be able to bring you all of that in our number one here this afternoon. But we get right into it, talking about some of the player rankings for college football for the Auburn Tigers, and an offense, at least when you're looking at it, that should bring a whole lot of excitement on the sticks.
Yeah, looking at the some of the guys on this offense that you're going to see, it's a lot of skill position guys near the top of the list for the Auburn Tigers. So if you don't know, because there's probably people that don't, ratings go from zero being the worst player you've ever seen, 99.
I don't believe there are any zeros.
I hope not.
I think the lowest team overall, which EA has actually gotten a little bit of flack from, almost boosting everybody a little bit more,
yes,
to make them where they're playing, because it's like there are certain teams that are 58s overall, and it's like, this team is a 40 at best. And so
yeah,
maybe a little bit with the players as well. But yes, anywhere from, say, 50 to 99,
right,
is basically the way that they yes, choose to go about this.
Yes. So you look at the top of this offense, it's Byron Brown, the quarterback, an 89 overall. And looking at some of his attributes or what makes him good, Auburn fans are probably going to be excited if they're going to be playing this video game. 87 speed at the quarterback position is very, very good, especially in what the modern offense, like, effectively, there are running backs in college football that don't have that level of speed.
Yeah.
90 acceleration, 90 agility. He has a 92 stamina. He 78 trucking at a quarterback. That's pretty impressive. 89 juke move. And then, can he sling the football? 90 throw power. 88 throw, kind of between in the high 80s for throw accuracy. 92 play action, 90 throw on the run. Christian, what is this? To someone that may not play the video game as you and I do sometimes, what does this look like? Like, what does this translate to?
It looks like I do not want to use the disrespect of Michael Vick in Madden 2004,
no,
because that's one of the greatest video game players of all time. But in this type of game, it's somebody that just opens up the entire offense. And I think that's exactly what Byron Brown does in real life as well, which I think shows why there is so much excitement for Byron in this Auburn offense, in this Alex Golish offense, but Byron Brown in an Auburn uniform, because if these stats and these skills can translate to the football field in real life inside Jordan-Hare Stadium on the road and in Mercedes-Benz to kick off the season against Baylor as well, then this makes it to where it's just a fun player to use. It's a fun player to watch. And it's somebody, in terms of when you're playing this game, and again, we're not diving into the X's and O's of the college football video game, but For the younger generation that has seen Auburn struggle of the past, you see a guy like Byron Brown, and it's, okay, let's go use this guy for a year. Let's go see what it's about. It brings so much popularity. It brings so much just feedback to what this Auburn team is going to look like. Because, again, starting with Byron Brown and working our way down, this offense is going to be very, very fun to use. But as everybody knows in the video game and in real life, more times than not, it starts with the quarterback.
Yes, Byron Brown, looking at him compared nationally, Dante Moore, the top-rated quarterback in the class right here, and that's a guy, he should be an NFL quarterback right now. Julian Sain right behind him. Trinidad Chambliss, a guy that we talked about yesterday in our quarterback rankings. Another guy you've talked about is Arch Manning is high up there. Sam Leavitt at 90. And then Byron Brown right below him at 89 overall. Just rounding out the – just a hair shy of the top 10, finishing about 10th or 11th in the rankings, which for the quarterback position, Auburn having a top quarterback is very, very nice to see for once.
Yeah, if you're telling me that Byron Brown finishes as the 11th best quarterback in college football, just from what these ratings show, yeah, I think I'd be okay with that. I think just about anybody that wears the orange and blue would be okay with that. And Byron Brown is getting the Heisman odds and getting some of the Heisman looks already in the preseason, and rightfully so, based off of the statistics and being one of the very select few that have thrown for 3,000 and rushed for 1,000 in a single year. But we've talked a lot about it, and the most successful complete offenses, the Heisman looks are more so just because the quarterback does what he needs to do. And I don't mean that as just a game manager, but Auburn doesn't need a Heisman Trophy winner to go have a good season. Obviously, something like that would help, but Byron Brown's going to be Byron Brown. It's the other positions, it's going to be the line of scrimmage. It's going to be the defense that really steps up and makes it a complete unit, to where if Byron Brown is the 11th best quarterback in college football, by all means, you would take that, you'd absolutely run with it, and it would be a whole lot of fun. You continue on in the backfield itself. Jeremiah Cobb listed as an 88 overall. You go just a couple places down, and Bryson Washington, an 87 overall. You talk about, again, just a very fun offense to be able to use. The dual threats, the QB read of what those three guys can look like in the backfield. Holy cow. You're looking at Jeremiah Cobb, who has 92 speed and 91 agility. Bryson Washington, who has 89 speed, 87 agility, and 85 awareness as well, which awareness basically just plays to knowing where the defenders are, being able to set the right moves and everything like that. But the standpoint that you have a quarterback with running back types of numbers that can also sling the football around, and then Jeremiah Cobb, who's your bell cow, Bryson Washington, who's going to be a fantastic running back in this system as well. You look at Mekhi Davenport, Omar Mapson, the idea, Alvin Henderson. You have so many guys in the backfield of how nice is it to sit there and look at, yeah, Jeremiah Cobb is a fantastic back. Bryson Washington is an incredible back, yet neither one of those guys are probably going to lead the SEC in rushing simply because there's so many different guys. That's the Alex Golish offense. He wants to be able to hand the ball off to three or four different guys, but how nice is it when you're looking at these College Football 27 ratings that you have a bunch of them that are in the very high 80s?
Right, and having a guy like Bryson Washington to be a bruiser back with a guy with 87 trucking while Jeremiah Cobb is that speed back, and then you'll have Omar Mapson at an 80 overall is kind of a complementary back alongside it. That makes up a pretty good running back room that can 100% take pressure off of Byron Brown. If this fruition comes to light, but he won't be alone in the skill position players. Keyshawn Singleton at an 88 overall, he will be a dynamic deep threat on the outside. Looking as well, Chaz Nimrod at an 82 overall. Jake Johnson at tight end, he rounds out in an 82 overall. Bryce Kane, the last surviving member of the Freeze 4 to 5, he's at an 81 overall. Jeremiah Koger at 81. So there will be 80 overalls on the field at almost every position on the offense. The one position that I am curious on your opinion on, that I'm a little concerned over, is the offensive line. The highest overall on that offensive line is Cole Best, a guy that is really good and is at that 82 overall. But then, and Stanton Ramil, who is a 81 overall left tackle. That's it for 80 overall linemen. You know, you have some young guys that are in the high 70s. But I would like your opinion. Is that concern you at all, if that's what is the expectation for Auburn?
I think when you're looking at it, that's obviously the offensive line is the position group that you have the most question marks with. And I'm not going to go as far as to say that it is a concern, but I think it's one that I'll continue to use the mindset of it's a positive light that there are so many question marks, because this team and this offensive line especially has the ability to go out and prove why they belong. And when you're looking at the center ratings, according to, again, EA College Football, which we're diving into right now, you have six players that are a 90 or higher, and then you begin working your way throughout the 80s, the upper 80s, and then getting into the lower 80s. And Cole Best, you do have to scroll down a little bit for, but again, this is going to be one of your captains, and the fact that you have a lot of your linemen as 82s to kind of 77, 78s making their way from South Florida to the SEC, I would be willing to say that a lot of those guys would be listed higher once any sort of updates come.
Sure.
But I don't think that this is something that's worthy of concern, I guess, just in terms of the video game. And maybe this is the reason why Alex Golish is going and recruiting the offensive line so heavy. We hope that that's not the case. But if he's looking at it in spring and summer workouts of, okay, our offensive line isn't really where we want it to be, we need to go get some more of those guys. Yet that being said, I will choose, at least for now, to take that much more positive route of, you're not going to see upper 80s, low 90s for offensive linemen, especially ones that work their way from the G5 level to the P4 level.
No, I don't disagree with you at that. And again, this is not set in stone. This is not Byron Brown is going to be this good. And 100%, I agree with you in the scenario that there could be a point in, you know, mid-September where, okay, actually, Auburn's offensive line has been a lot better. They're going to all get a bump up. They're all going to be in the low 80s. Cole Best maybe is in the upper 80s. But it's just looking – it's more of the what I worried about was looking at the disparity between all the skill position guys and the O-line. Now, granted, if it was the other way around, would you be that same concern? Again, I probably have the same concern there, yeah. But I think that there is 100% – it's more about the room to grow for Auburn rather than the limitation.
Yeah, and again, makes it to where it's a very good thing when you – hopefully are able to play college football 27 here in the next couple of weeks if you choose to do so, or the route that we're taking if college football 27 rankings are right. That shows that Auburn's offense, especially the skill guys, are set to have a whole lot of success. We'll take a first break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Flip to the defensive side of the football on the other side. Also take a brief look around some of the other players that are no longer wearing the orange and blue, and then just some of the top of the line guys set for the video game, and talk a little bit more about that before we dive into some of the stadium rankings and see where teams in the SEC are at, see where teams that Auburn is going to have to go to, and see where Jordan-Hare Stadium is at as well. Be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. The phone lines are open all afternoon long. 334-784-1685 is the text box as well. We'll be back right after this.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. In 1920, baseball changed forever. Before then, the game was dominated by pitching and low scores. Then came Babe Ruth. The slugger swung for the fences. Home runs soared into the stands. The crowds filled ballparks to watch the Sultan of SWAT. Ruth transformed baseball into America's national pastime and helped make sports central to American culture. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, he is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we're breaking down the EA College Football 27 video game and the player rankings, and then how that translates to what we expect to see on the actual football field here in 2026. And we talked a lot about the offense and how Byron Brown leads that offense, Jeremiah Cobb, Bryson Washington, Keyshawn Singleton. Those guys are the ones that kind of set the standard for what this Auburn offense is set to look like, not only in the game, but obviously in real life as well. But while we have just a moment, let's flip to the defensive side of the football. And I don't think that it comes as a surprise to many at all that Xavier Atkins is listed as the best player for the Auburn Tigers. I do not think that that is one that people would look at and go, really? Huh. I think Xavier Atkins is listed as a top three linebacker in the SEC, a top three linebacker in the country, and I don't know that it's second or third either, to be completely honest with you. Xavier Atkins at 91 overall has 90 speed, 90 agility, 94 awareness, which that on a defensive player, again, looking at these rankings, basically personifies exactly what Xavier Atkins does and did last year. Of it felt like at times DJ Durkin was, okay, we're going to play 10 on 10. We're going to basically play a box in one in basketball. If everybody else is going to have their own assignments, your assignment is to spy the quarterback, go get him, use your instincts, use your awareness, which is what I'm talking about here, but use your football brain. Go make a play, go get the football, do what you need to do, and just be very happy that you have number 17 on your side and not anybody else's.
Right. Looking into the Will linebacker spot, which Will and Sam linebackers are how they list left and right offense, or strong side, weak side linebackers, he is the fourth rated Will linebacker. That does not include any Sams. I'll have to go look and see what he has, but the people that over him at his position, Suntareen Perkins of the Ole Miss Rebels is a 92. He is tied with Austin Romaine of Texas Tech and Rolaj Hardy of Indiana. That kind of seems low for a guy that was a preseason All-American.
Yeah, and all the stats that he was able to list out, but still very, very excited to see Xavier Atkins not only in the game, but to see Xavier Atkins inside Jordan-Hare Stadium again.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of excitement. Rayshon Pleasant listed as an 85 overall. Dallas Walker an 84. Cody Sigler an 83. Malik Autry in 82 as well. Again, so you still have the heart of guys that are going to be very, very competitive if you choose to play with the Auburn Tigers. And so a lot of excitement on that side of things. But we talked about the players. What about the stadiums that they play in? We'll dive into EA College Football's stadium rankings, see where Jordan-Hare Stadium is at, see who's way too high, and talk about some of the under-talked-about stadiums as well when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for spending some time with us here on this Wednesday afternoon, and wrapped up the conversation on the player rankings for EA College Football. Now diving into the stadium rankings, and this is something that there's not a true blueprint. There's not a given formula from EA, at least that we have been made aware of. And so this is not just the ultimate determining factor of you have to have success on the football field to make your stadium very tough to play in. Yet, I would be willing to say that that plays a big-time factor in it, because the way your team plays ultimately results in how your fans react to it. And I would say and be willing to say that a lot of the fourth quarters decide these types of rankings, right?
Yeah.
Because the pregame environment is one thing. I'm sure that gets taken into consideration in the opening kickoff and halfway through the first quarter. But the fourth quarter is when the true stadium environment becomes the place that you want to play, the place you do not want to play in, the place that you're happy that it's your stadium rather than anybody else's. And so I'm just saying that is where my personal guesses of where these rankings are ultimately made. And I think those would be backed up to where Jordan-Hare Stadium is. We'll get to Jordan-Hare here in just a moment. But within the top 25, 11 of them are from the SEC. 7 of them are from the Big Ten. 4 from the ACC. 2 from the Big 12. And Notre Dame. Brandon, if you're listening, join a conference, and then maybe you'll be able to add that. And so, believing that I did my math correct on that side of things, 11 plus 7 and then 7 again. So
that would be correct. 7, 7, 14, 11, 25.
Boom. Look at that. Math was done before the show. You just can't do math on air. That's when it becomes the big time issue. Talking is hard enough to do on air, especially more so, or nonetheless, rather. See, talking is very difficult than doing math, too. But 11 stadiums from the SEC are within the top 25. And Brandon just texted me and told me to relax. get into Notre Dame here in just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah. Stadiums. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, the
Where
SEC.
Notre Dame? Yeah, Notre Dame is 20th, bro. Back off, okay? Auburn hasn't had a winning season in 7 years. Yeah, Jordan-Hare Stadium's listed above that.
He did text me and said that, like, hey, you know, Auburn's going to be as good as Notre, or maybe he's going to be as good as Notre Dame, and just let me have something. Notre Dame's been bad. They went to a national title 2 years ago. What are we talking about?
Yeah, bro.
But
get out of here.
So how do we want to? Do we want to go through the list, and or do we want to just jump into Auburn and then look at the list?
I think we'll work our way through the top 25. I want to spend more time again talking about the SEC teams, and then more so the ones that Auburn will play. Maybe get to that in the next segment when we also dive into who's way too high and way too low. But starting at 25, it's Davis Wade for Mississippi State, and I think that makes sense. I think it's a respectable place, especially when the team has success. When you have the cowbells, I have been there once, and that was the rainy Cadillac Williams Robbie Ashford game.
2022?
Yeah, that went in overtime. That was the final game that I covered for Weagle, and that was the final. It was either the final regular season win or the final win for the Pirates. And so I was able to go to that press conference because it was awesome, because there's videos of him on the sideline when they – because Auburn couldn't score in the first half. Mississippi State could do no wrong in the first half. And then it completely flipped in the second half. And chairs were being folded up and tossed to the side, basically saying that our players will not sit anymore.
Yes.
A fantastic press conference to be able to go to. But Mississippi State at 25, I think, is relatively respectable on that side of things. And then there are none from 24 to what? 16? No SEC teams in that side of things. And so 10 of the 16 stadiums that are the toughest to play in, according to EA College Football 27, are from the SEC. And we start with one that I think is underrated every single year. I think 16th is actually moving them up into a decent spot. It's Williams-Brice Stadium for South Carolina, because it is a very fun place to play. If Shane Beamer has his team ready to go, if Lenore Sellers can stay healthy and his team can help him out this year, if his offensive line can be of any help, that is always a place that you do not want to happily attend if you can avoid it.
No, I agree, and Willie Bryce is such a good stadium. It's not the biggest. It's not the best team on the football field. But when they got the towels going, Sandstorms blaring, or 2001 Space Odyssey's blaring, Cocky's going nuts. And I think that that's a great place to be in Columbia, South Carolina. Not an on-campus stadium.
No, it's not.
Which I think that that would help the environment so much. If I know it's in Columbia, it's hard to have space there. But if you could like switch that with something on campus, would it be sick? And I do want to touch on Mississippi State. I know you said they were at the 25 spot. I'm glad that they are the top 25 and Ole Miss is not. I do not think Ole Miss has this legendary environment that I think Rebels fans will tell you, because the best part of an Ole Miss game day happens outside the gates of the Grove.
Happens before and after kickoff.
Literally, like people would stay there during the game, and I have not been, but it's such a small – I've been to Ole Miss. It is a small stadium comparatively to people in the SEC. I have them closer to Vanderbilt than I do this list, to be quite honest with you, and I'm glad EA College Football agrees with me, because before the Lane Kiffin era, Oxford was just – it wasn't really a crazy road trip. Like, yeah, they had Hugh Freeze there, and it was a good environment, but I don't think it's a top 25 environment. So I'm glad that the college football EACFB people that made the stadium rankings did it right.
Yeah, South Carolina sits at 16th as the ninth lowest in terms of, or I guess the 10th lowest in terms of SEC, toughest places to play inside the SEC. But South Carolina, you feel like, again, the success comes from a little bit of desperation, which brings a little bit of the noise, the energy. And when they have the delusion of they can go win a game in the fourth quarter too, that's when things really get amped up. You then make your way to 14th, where Jordan-Hare Stadium sits. And
sure,
we'll save that for now,
we'll
because I think that is a very interesting place to have the Auburn Tigers. I think that it is one that splits a lot of opinions, but they are in the top 15. Auburn and Jordan-Hare Stadium, according to EA College Football, is listed as the 14th toughest place to play in 2026. Right above them is DKR, Texas Memorial Stadium, for the Texas Longhorns. Sure. Fine.
Sure.
Don't have a true opinion one way or another. They're kind of just the ones that... It's kind of one of those filler stadiums that I think it can be tough to play. I think it can be fun. I don't feel strongly one way or the other.
I think that if I would this is a weather take in a way. If I had to go to DKR in August or early September when it's 100 degrees outside and everyone in there is in boots, jeans, and cowboy hats, not to just stare, you know, cast type Texas fans. I know that's what they wear, and getting loud, I'd be a little bit more intimidated than if I had to go to DKR on a November night where it's cool, it's crisp. I think that the heat plays to their advantage there and makes it a hard environment. I don't know if I would say it's an SEC environment yet, unlike Oklahoma, which is the next team on the list to get a little bit ahead at 11 in the SEC, which I think that that's a better – I think that is how it should be with, I think, Oklahoma, the Palace on the Prairie – in Gaylord Family Oklahoma Memorial Stadium is over DKR, in my opinion, because I think no matter what, you're going in there expecting a fight.
That and OU's stadium is a complete bowl. Texas has a little bit more of like the high dollar side of things on one side of the stadium with like couches and stuff with the Texas logo, Longhorn, or the Texas Longhorn logo, which
I do love that.
Is really sweet. But I think that could play a factor right under their scoreboard to make it to where it's okay, it's a little bit more of a chill atmosphere rather than the ruckus
yeah,
crowd.
It's what people on the internet call a wine and cheese crowd.
Sure.
Where we go to the Texas game on a Saturday instead of we're going to cheer on the Longhorns.
Right.
I think that is the big difference between Oklahoma and Texas. I think Oklahoma fans are the ones that are going to go nuts.
Yeah, and I do think just getting to this conversation, because I know that a lot of fans for Auburn are making that comparison of, okay, well, if you're taking fans away from one side of the stadium, adding the high dollar side of things, I think Auburn did it very, very nicely to where you're still keeping the seats that want to be there, but you're making it to where there are other places to be able to go.
Sure.
It feels like the happy medium of the two, which was really nicely done on that side of things. Inside the top 10, a lot of teams from the SEC. You have Kyle Field at number 10.
Underrated.
Really? You think so?
I think Kyle Field is a top three SEC environment. It is one of the biggest.
Is this year in, year out? Or is this if your ranking is this team is 9-1 in late October into November?
I still think that they are a fantastic stadium. They are it's one of the biggest stadiums. Texas A&M, ever since really they joined the SEC, has made that investment in their stadium, and it has worked. Texas A&M fans are legitimately insane. I mean, they meet up to practice this stuff at the Midnight Yell, and we could save all the jokes.
Fine, Texas A&M.
Yeah,
I didn't save a joke.
Yeah, we can talk about that another day, because I'd love to talk about the Yell leaders and disparage them. But I think Texas A&M Stadium is the best in the state of Texas. I fully believe that, and the Aggie wore him with all of the stands shaking. I'd be a lot more intimidated to have to go play a Saturday in Kyle Field than DKR, 100%.
Compound.
Compacts.
Fine, sorry.
That's got to be some kind of like picks punishment. You have to do a full show.
It's a fantasy football punishment. Yes. I lost my fantasy football punishment and had to become a Texas A&M Yale leader for a season.
Or you had to.
That is incredible. If anybody wants to,
and you have, make but you have happen. To, you have to wear the uniform.
Oh, of course. You have to stand outside for. You have to stand outside the stadium for the entire game
until you get, or until you get like 10. Whoop.
Oh, yeah, until you get people to join you. Oh, that's that's incredible.
Keep that in the back pocket. Keep that in
the Auburn, totally off track, but the Auburn rant is, or the Auburn midnight yell was one of the funniest ones. Cause
it's like in Birmingham.
That, and then like when it was at Kyle Field a couple of years ago, it was like, sister loving, cousin, like it was, Good one, bro.
You
got us.
Hey, what do y'all do on third downs? You grab what?
Woohoo! Okay, we're inside the top 10. And I tell you what, we'll go ahead and take our break here. Come back, wrap up hour number one. Diving into this, a quick look at how many teams that, or how many stadiums that are in this top 25 that Auburn has to go to. And then also continue diving into the teams that are way too high and way too low, because there's a couple in the top 10 that I can't really say that I agree with. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And I have to work relatively quickly here as we have 5 minutes or so before the music kicks us out of here.
Oh, no. Sorry. We may have used some AI for a quick one of our good friends in the Yell Leader outfit.
Oh, that will not surface anywhere, but that is, oh, wow, that's absolutely hilarious. Again, yes, we made one of our buddies an AI image of them being a Texas A&M Yale leader, which, again, was a segment in the previous segment. If you missed it, you can always go back afterwards and listen to the podcast. Boom. At ESPNAU.com. But we have now hit the top nine toughest stadiums to play in college football, 27. And going to move relatively quickly, Memorial Stadium for Clemson is number 9. Neyland Stadium, surprisingly, number 8. I would be willing to make the argument to move that stadium up. Just a couple of places, Ben Hill Griffin, the Swamp, Florida, number 7. I'd also be willing to move that up a little bit. Autzen Stadium, number 6. Samford Stadium, number 4, Beaver Stadium, Ohio Stadium, and Tiger Stadium. Georgia, Penn State, Ohio State, LSU, 4, 3, 2, and 1. In case you didn't know, there's a number I missed and purposely left.
Not just because you're bad at math. It's because you want you for dramatic effect.
Bro, Bryant Denny as a top 5 stadium in college football. Not in the SEC. In college football?
What are we doing?
What?
What's going on? No, I agree with you. Bryant Denny.
Above Oregon. Above It Never Rains in Autzen Stadium. Above the Swamp. Above Neyland Stadium. Above Kyle Field. Hell, above Gaylord Family Memorial. Above Michigan Stadium. Above DKR. Above Jordan-Hare. Above Husky Stadium, which I believe is the most underrated college football stadium in America.
Fine take. I don't disagree. I think that is 5th? A good stadium. 5th. Mm-hmm. Correct. And goodness, sound effects. No, I agree with you. I wouldn't say Bryant Denny is a top 5 SEC stadium.
Exactly.
Like, I have LSU number 1, that they got that right. Let's go ahead and say it. Penn State fans, you can disagree. Penn State probably should be 2. But yeah, LSU 1 in the SEC. I'd have Neyland 2. I think Neyland is a fantastic environment, especially when it's jumping. And they make it jumping every game. I think the difference between a lot of these games, I'll give Georgia, and I don't know if I would say this yet about Georgia. I'm going to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because I think peak for peak, they're above Alabama. But I think both are starting to have this problem. Alabama's had this problem of, oh, we're playing Mercer.
Yeah.
We're playing – they don't play teams in the state of Alabama. They're scared. Oh, we're playing Southern Miss. Yeah, we don't have to go to that game. Let's go downtown. Let's go hit downtown Tuscaloosa. That's not – again, it's not a – people aren't, you know, selling arms and limbs to go and be at an Alabama football game.
Yeah.
It's just what you do on a Saturday while other places – to get into Tiger Stadium, to get into Beaver Stadium, to get into Neyland, Kyle, Gaylord Family. I think these are all better stadiums than Alabama. And I think it's just it's the Bama blindness. It's the, well, this team won a lot of home games.
That's exactly it. And
in the Saban era.
Yes.
He ain't there no more, Paul. They almost lost at home to South Carolina.
Football, Paul.
Football, Paul.
Same thing. I think Georgia, again, does play a little bit into that, but Georgia also, as much as I dislike talking positively about Georgia,
when it's on, it's on.
Doing my due diligence of the fact that Georgia's had one true like SEC night game in like the last handful of years, and it was last year. I think they get one of them this year as well, but that is a very scary environment. But I think that's why it's a little bit more beneficial that Auburn gets the afternoon game this year between the hedges, because I think that does play a big time factor. Yet that being said, there's some of those stadiums, and I think that Brian Denny plays a factor in those of, yeah, it's because historically they've won in that stadium. Yet if you take the overall time period out of it. Because, oh yeah, obviously stadiums get more difficult to play in if it's a 7 or a 7:30 tip or kickoff versus an 11 or a noon kickoff. But if you take that completely out of it, I don't think that people are like, oh gosh, Brian Denny is one of those places that absolutely fears me if I'm just talking about the atmosphere in the stadium itself. I understand the team that plays there historically has been very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
But
I think if you put the product on the field of Auburn this past 5 years in Bryant Denny Stadium, that place is quieter than an electric vehicle, point blank.
While it's charging or after it's done charging?
After it's on the road.
Is your car electric?
No.
Okay, just making sure. I didn't know if that was like a self diss out of understanding, but
no, that was a fully intended diss. I think that place would be the message boards and the phone calls would be in the Tuscaloosa area would be louder than the actual stadium.
Yeah, Alabama gives up a touchdown, doesn't score a touchdown, all the phones ring at once.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah, Brian Denny Stadium at number 5, the fifth toughest place to play in college football for the road teams. Real quickly before the music kicks us out of here, looking at the places Auburn has to go, Samford Stadium, obviously one of them. Neyland Stadium, one of them. That's 4.
Denny.
Number 8, Bryant Denny at number 5.
Yeah.
Woo!
Woo!
They've
had to play at number 10 and at number 11 recently.
Yeah. Number 25... We go two state, don't
yes.
we?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, number 25 in that category as well. But not the most difficult if there were other places to play that could have been what it could have been, especially, again, the time period's playing a big factor in there as well. That'll wrap up our number 1. When we come back, we flip to the legitimate football field because, my goodness, it's been like a week since we've talked about it. Alex Golish does it again.
An Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Don't look now, but Alex Golish and staff, even during the dead period, they did it again.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And appreciate, again, everybody for being here with us. You didn't want to watch any lacrosse up on the TV, man? I mean,
not really. The Naptown Challenge. Teams to be announced.
Heck yeah. Seems exciting to me. What was exciting, though, was hour number one, where we were able to have a true fun conversation on, again, the month of July finally being here, which means we are only basically 1 month, if you will, a month and a half, if not basically 2 months from the start of college football. But the back half of July makes the talking season feel as if college football is finally here, with SEC Media Days coming up in 19 days. And so with that, we are less than a week away from the true release of College Football 27. And so we were able to dive into some of the Auburn player rankings for the video game and how we hope that that translates to what we see on the field inside Jordan-Hare Stadium in 2026. Also, we're able to take a little look again at the offensive side, the defensive side, and how we hope things can kind of click in year one for Alex Golish. Looked around some of the other players, the top players, and some of the positions as well. Before diving into the stadium rankings and how Auburn sits at 14th inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, again, inside the top 15, but I guess we didn't have too much of a conversation, so we can have a little bit of that here to start hour number two. But talked about some of the stadiums that were way too high, some of the stadiums that were way too low, and over the next week or so, we will probably give our top 25 college football rank or stadium rankings as well, just to be able to compare with one another and also compare to what EA College Football 27 has to say. But gave those conversations. We made fun of our friend Brandon, who I don't know if you're still listening, but took some shots at him, which is always fun to do on a Wednesday afternoon when you can make fun of conference-less Notre Dame. Always really, really fun to do. But how 11 stadiums from the SEC are in the top 25. Seven of them are from the Big Ten, four from the ACC, two from the Big 12, and Notre Dame. So we're able to dive into all of that, which was a really, really fun conversation. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in the second hour of the show, we're going to be jumping around a little bit, just kind of talking about what's been going on in the sports world at large now that we are in the kind of slow season for Auburn Athletics until media days and then football season, and then it all starts again. We'll be talking a little bit about what's going on in Truist Park in Atlanta because, ooh, you know, as two Braves fans, we definitely need to have maybe not a State of the Union, but a State of the Braves conversation to check in and make sure they're okay.
Make sure there's still a pulse. Make sure there's still a heartbeat.
Yeah. See if there's still, I don't know, the bats are allowed to be swung and balls are allowed to be hit and play. Maybe remind them of that.
Sure. Kindly.
We'll talk a little bit more about the NBA free agency and how one Auburn Tiger just made himself a boatload of money out on the West Coast. And we'll talk a little bit of recruiting with a big commit signing with the Tigers, one that Christian Clemente talked about last Friday. If you've not heard that, I know it may be a little out of date now that this guy is committed. Go check that out and maybe know what's next, what else is going on in this class. But if you want to be able to join the show, phone lines are going to be wide open the entire hour, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Give your reaction to maybe something we talked about in hour number one, something we're going to talk about in hour number two, or really anything that you want to talk about in the world of sports. We are more than happy to oblige. Text box is always open at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTO. And I feel like that's where we head first because you immediately started laughing at a text box notification.
I did. Again, yes, the text box is always open at 784-1OTL, 334-784-1685. And we'll save a lot of this conversation for 3:30, but happy to be able to say that our text box said it, so that way I don't have to. It's only four words. Austin Riley is horrible.
Yeah, you hate to see that. We'll talk about it at 3:30, but yeah, sad. But goodness. But hey, you know who's not horrible?
Hitting 190 isn't good anymore? What do you mean?
It's from Austin to Alex and Alex Golish. The person that is on fire right now in the recruiting trail, even when he's not making contact with these guys in the dead period.
No, nobody is. Nobody is. Mr. Marquise Evans, the four-star edge from Spain Park, the most recent Auburn football commit for the 2027 recruiting class. Auburn, the ninth-ranked class, according to 24/7. They are the 11th-ranked class, according to On3. But regardless of the overall positioning, if I were to tell you that Auburn, at this point, on July 1st, is sitting in the top 25, you would be quite happy. If I told you they were in the top 30, you'd be relatively happy. It makes things a little bit easier when you're able to look to the other side of the state, and you see that recruiting side of things, which...
Hey, they officially, according to this tweet as I look... On 247, we're out of the 50s. The Tide move up to the 44th class in the country.
There you go. Which, again, does go to show you what one or two commits, and that's not a slight at them. It's more of just the fact of when you don't have too many guys, adding a four-star or adding 2 4-stars makes a big jump. But, again, I guess it's kind of counterproductive, my argument, because for them it's like, yeah, it's only July. I'm not going to Chris Gordy poo-poo on them too hard. But for Auburn, it's like, it's only July, but we're excited. But I do think it shows the different states that everybody is at, although they're in the same state. But
sure,
you're picking up what I'm putting down. Mm-hmm. Auburn, the ninth-ranked recruiting class, again, according to 24/7. And the most recent one... Look at your phone. never mind. We cannot. We will not speak publicly. We sent the picture of the Yale leader to our buddy, and we just got his response. The 4-star edge from Spain Park. Again, Marquise Evans, the most recent commit for the Auburn Tigers. He is listed as a man's man, and I don't think that there are too many people that would disagree with something like that. 6'4", 270. As a 4-star edge rusher, holy cow. He is the 211th ranked player nationally. He is the 24th ranked edge rusher and another top 10 recruit inside the state of Alabama. And that is something that has been a big time conversation throughout the state over the last couple of weeks of, man, look at what the in-state recruiting used to be. Look at what it is now and how Auburn had 25 of them. Well, you add another one with the top 10 player in the state, a big time get for the Tigers. Again, big time from the standpoint of getting another defensive edge rusher, getting one from the state of Alabama, and big time because he is 6'4", 270 pounds. The first commit of July, which I don't mean to burst anybody's bubble. I don't mean to be the party pooper here on this payday, July 1st. Auburn's July won't be as good as their June. I know that comes with the boo hotkey that we still need to get in there. Whoa. But I don't think you could keep up with Auburn's June if you truly wanted to, especially considering, again, that is the 25th commit for Alex Golish, for Andrew Warsaw, and for Alex Fagan. But how incredible is it that even during the dead period, we knew about this commit. You mentioned it. Christian Clemente brought it up to us talking about this is a guy you need to look for, as well as a couple of guys in late July that Auburn is making a run for, an update for the 4/5-star cornerback, Tay Walden. Believe it or not, did commit to the Oregon Ducks over Auburn and Georgia, but I don't think that was overly surprising to anybody. But both of those guys committed this morning, and Marquise Evans, the most recent Auburn Tiger, another big-time 4-star, another big-time get for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Marquise Evans can do this season in the high school ranks. He'll be in the top classification now with it being 7A, or I guess 6A now, but they move up, and I'm excited to see what he could look like. I'm trying to find some his stats last year to be able to give you an idea of how good he was with the with what he was doing. But look, I'm excited. I think that this is a big guy. Again, according to some TJ Randall, 247 Sports analyst, again, he's a very he can just shred blockers, bends and moves at a level beyond expectation, and he's got a great wingspan. So that'll be very, very interesting. Again, in 2025, his 9-game season, 28 tackles, 8 of those were tackles for loss with 6 sacks, 2 fumble recoveries, 1 forced fumble. He's going to be a guy that they are going to lean on or in this class if they can bring him up, kind of what Jared Smith was for the Auburn Tigers and Keldrick Falk was for the Auburn Tigers, as a big name edge rusher that can get after the quarterback and make a play.
Sure, yeah. I think Marquise will play a little bit more of that power rusher rather than just the speed rusher.
Yes.
But the ability that you have a guy that's 270 pounds that's playing the edge position, that is pretty incredible to think about. And so the movement and the athleticism, the agility that he has speaks for itself, as does – we've talked a little bit about the star ranking not meaning as much as it used to, right? You feel like in a weird way with Cignetti and Indiana – it brought a little bit back, more back of the, okay, we're going to go get the guys that work for us, that fit our system, that are willing to be coached, and we will put them in that perfect spot to where, okay, you don't really see the, haha, three-star you, regardless of any three-star that commits anywhere because of the less value that it has. You more so look at who he also had offers from and who the offer list was, who he had in his top five, who he had in his top three. Evans committed to Auburn over Tennessee, Miami, Florida, and South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, and the number two, according to at least On Three Rivals from the prediction kind of idea, was South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But Tennessee, a program that will have one of the best defenses in the country, bringing over Jim Knowles from Penn State. And they already had a fantastic defense with multiple first-round edges. So they already had the proven camaraderie and the proven production there. Miami, another team that's dominant in the trenches that has had first-round edge rushers. I think of Reumed Bain off the top of my head. That's been one. Florida, another team that's been really good in the trenches, but they're kind of trying to build back. South Carolina has Dylan Stewart, one of the best edge rushers in college football, and is a guy that will be probably a top 5 pick in the NFL draft this year with his speed, his power, his frame, everything. And he goes to Auburn, a team that can do the same exact thing. And if he believes this coaching staff to be the best place where he can get developed and go play to the next level in the NFL over edge factories like Tennessee, Miami, Florida, South Carolina, that gives me a lot of hope for what this staff can do and what this staff is putting out there. And basically, can they walk the walk after talking the talk? I think they can.
Marquise Evans, the most recent commit for the Auburn Tigers, 6'4", 270, 211th ranked player, another top 300 commit for the Auburn Tigers. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them, I believe, if my math is correct, that are top 300 commits for the Tigers, and the third edge rusher in the class. And two of them are unanimous 4-stars, and then you have Ryan Jackson, who I don't know how he isn't a 4-star, will be without a doubt when everything is said and done. And gosh, you continue to look at this defense and just scrolling down, looking at the commits on 24/7 Sports. You have Isaac McNeil, who is still listed as the top commit for the Auburn Tigers, 63rd ranked player nationally. He is the second ranked player in the state of Alabama. From down in Mobile, you then have Chance Gilbert, who is from East Coweta High School, a top 110 player in the class, but a linebacker, a safety. You then have James Pace from Dematha, that Maryland pipeline. You have Marquise Evans, who is now basically your fourth-ranked defensive commit for the 2027 class out of Spain Park in Hoover. You have Donovan Moore from Bessemer, a 4-star. You have Nate Comba, the Charlotte, North Carolina interior defensive lineman, that's a 4-star. And then you have guys like Aiden Wiggins, Kareem Palmer. You have Ryan Jackson, who I mentioned, Kenyere Crum, who people are really high on. You have Nash Johnson from McEachern. You have Nasir Banks, also his teammate from McEachern. You have Preston Williams as well. And so the defense, man, continuing to round out. DJ Durkin continuing to basically go and get the names that he wants, which you feel like continues to build the confidence, because
yeah,
when you go and you talk with the defense for Auburn and how many of them – in today's day and age, yes, you still play for the school, but even more so, you go play for a coach. To be able to play for DJ Durkin, be able to have guys like Xavier Atkins that can be that spokesman of, yeah, I left LSU to go play for DJ Durkin, and then when I found out that he was returning, there was no question that I was staying an Auburn Tiger. You have somebody like that can go and speak for this 2027 defensive recruiting class. It just brings a whole lot of excitement, a whole lot of comfort just in terms of knowing that your defense is not going to be an issue from for any time in the future.
No, I agree with all that. I think that's all really, really fine and dandy. Another big thing that I think that I love about this commitment, it continues that in-state recruiting that I try and preach with a now up to 24% of the class being in-state. One out of every four guys is not bad, but then you look at who they are. It's Isaac McNeil coming from Vigor. You have Donovan Moore coming from Bessemer City. DeSean Hall coming from Prattville. These are top high schools in the state. You even have guys in Marquise Evans from Spain Park.
You're going around the entire state, too, which is a very nice thing to say.
And then even guys that are a little bit further under the radar, quote-unquote, that I think shouldn't be under the radar, like a guy like a Cedric Simmons coming from Selma, who is phenomenal. And then Preston Williams from J.W. Long in Skipperville, Alabama, just south of here. That's going to just continue to build those inroads and relationships around the state where it's not just you're a top player at a top institution in Alabama. Like, oh, you're a top player at Thompson. You're a top player at Central Phoenix City. You're a top player at Hewitt Trustful. You're a top player at Vestavia Hills. You're going to go to Alabama, obviously. No, Auburn is going to be able to is making those inroads at every level of from 6A to ASIAA or AHSA Private Division II. That's what you're going to see, and that is so exciting for what this team could be in the near future if he continues to trend with this, keeping the guys home that are wanting to be here and bringing guys in from across the country that can compete and are high-level talent.
Auburn picks up its 25th commit in the 2027 recruiting class, top 10 in 24/7, listed as the number 9 team, according to On3, the 11th ranked team. But most recently, Marquise Evans, the Spain Park from Hoover, Alabama, the unanimous four-star edge rusher, 6'4", 270-pound, again, edge rusher. You see the speed, you see the agility, obviously the power comes with it as well. Alex Golish and staff continue to work on the recruiting trail and hoping again that the wins continue to compound it and make that recruiting that much easier. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll flip over to the hardwood and talk about some of the biggest names in the NBA as well as a rising star that played here on the plains inside Neville Arena not too long ago. That made himself a nice little payday over on the West Coast. We'll talk about that when we come back as we're off and running here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
We are back here in the studio. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody being here with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And bouncing around to the next sports, bouncing like dribbling. Oh, dribbling a basketball. Let's talk NBA for a few moments as, holy cow, the trade tracker is popping off on ESPN right now. But there are none bigger or taller, I should say. Ha. Look at that. It's all sorts of puns here this afternoon. The Lakers land Mr. Walker Kessler from a sign-and-trade from the Utah Jazz. The Lakers get Walker Kessler. The Jazz will get a couple of unprotected first-round picks as well as first-round swaps in 2028 and 2030. But the man who was blocking shots and pinning them off the backboard not too long ago inside Neville Arena just got paid.
Yeah, and rightfully so. As one of the best defensive bigs in the league, hopefully if the offense could come from him a little bit more than it already is. I mean, a 14-10 double-double machine. I think that they would want him definitely get to closer to 20. Would be great for an offensive center. I mean, when you're sitting at 7-2, you know, you can do that.
It's also, sorry to cut you off, but you're now playing with much better point guards, respectfully, as sure. well, that will make getting the basketball easier. And I mean, you look at what Luka does and Colin Sexton as well, as they traded for them as well. Lakers have gone out and got like four or five names here this afternoon. But getting guys that can get into the paint, and you know that Luka loves to throw the lob, or much less, again, outside shots leading to more offensive rebounds, that could lead to a lot more points for Walker.
Yeah, looking at the guard room for what the Utah Jazz had, it was like Keontae George, Kennedy Chandler, and Ace Bailey. No one really lets, like, or an Isaiah Collier, who's not like a true point guard. The leader in assists was Collier with 7.2, which is solid. I can't lie about that.
I do love Isaiah Collier, though.
I do love Isaiah Collier. Yeah, no, he's good. He's done some really good. But with Luka Doncic, who is probably the best passer in the NBA right now, that'll be exciting to set him up.
Hot take.
He's up there.
Best pure passer?
I wouldn't say he's a pure passer. I mean, it's just like if you had to draft someone to be your passing point guard, like take the offense out of it, which Luka
just
is,
point guard, not just offensive guard. Passer.
A traditional point guard.
Okay. Ooh.
I mean,
give me Iguodala. No, I don't know. I think you'd put them. I thought you just said the best passer in the NBA, and I was like, best true passer. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I could make a conversation on that side, but
let me see who the leader in assists were during the regular season.
I mean, again, I'm not putting Nikola Jokic as my point guard.
It's Luka Doncic, the leader in assists. He averaged. Oh, this is points. Hold on, assist. Yeah, NBA. Yeah, Jokic, Cade, and Luka still at third.
Yeah, I am putting Cade Cunningham as my traditional point guard.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
the passer standpoint, overall, but just as a passer. Oh yeah,
fine. I think that's fair. I think I'd take Luka just because I think that Cade to me mentally is more of a two guard, who can go on ball, but not like a true.
But Cade also got, I mean, getting in half of his assists, which weren't. That's not a complaining thing at all, but it's the dink and dunks to Jaden Duren, right? Or the lob threats. Walker Kessler is one of the best lob threats in the NBA that make the entire passing lanes that much more open and make it that much easier for a point guard like Luka, who obviously loves to stand behind the three-point line, but can get downhill, can draw the fouls, but loves playing right at that free throw line, to where if the shot blocker goes out for to try and block his shots.
You'll have to check your phone in a minute.
Oh, gosh.
It
makes the lob threat that much there. And so I think it's a fantastic trade that the Lakers get for Walker Kessler. And I would say it's a relatively healthy deal for Mr. Kessler as well.
Yeah, I mean, only kind of, again, a pick move and a money move, because the Utah Jazz knew, okay, Walker is going to deserve this contract.
Yeah, 4-year, $130 million.
Yes, and it's more of the, well, we're going to look at continuing to kind of build around our young guys like Kyle Filipowski and Jaren Jackson Jr. and having Isaiah Collier, Ace Bailey, Lauri Markkanen, who's a little bit older, but I think those are going to be the pieces they're trying to build around, while Walker Kessler will be going to L.A. with a bona fide superstar that can win now.
Looking at that 2019 team for the Auburn Tigers, Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith. Jabari signed a contract extension last season about this time. They are combining for 9 years, $252 million. Walker just got, again, 4-year, $130 million. But the two of them combined for 9 years, $252 million. And so the Auburn Tigers, that made it to the round of 32 and got knocked off by Miami, just got paid.
That month they were number one, though, was awesome. Until they went to Arkansas.
Nope, sorry, I don't remember it. I don't remember that whatsoever. Nope. Don't remember the play. And, in fact, the music's kicking us out of here. We got to take a break, and when we come back, a conversation that's about as gruesome to talk about as Auburn, Arkansas, with Wendell Green getting dunked on. It's the fact of swing and miss, strikeouts. 13 of their last 17. The Atlanta Braves got to find a way to get some wins.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending some time here on the Wednesday afternoon. On the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, and just some programming news while we have a minute or two. I know we'll probably discuss this a little bit more at the end of the show and then a lot tomorrow, but no drive here this afternoon, so ESPN programming will be from 4 to 6, in case we did not mention that yesterday. So, again, no Bill Cameron out of town on vacation here this week before everything gets ramped up yet again. So, no drive. And then, as well, with that, no shows on Friday. And so, you will not be able to hear from us here on Friday. But that means that there's usually a pretty good reason. And the 4th of July, I would say, weekend is a pretty good reason for that. And so, just a little bit of programming news on that side of things.
Are you a watch the Nathan's hot dog eating contest guy?
Not out of enjoyment, but out of tradition. Yeah.
Really?
I'm not. I don't enjoy watching it, but I do.
I mean, it's not like it. Professional eating is not a pleasing sport to watch.
Definitely not.
But I mean, it's really is anyone going to catch Joey this year? That's kind of why I watch it, and it is. Again, it's tradition. I don't really watch. Sometimes I'll tune into the lemonade chugging competition.
I was going to say, I do. I don't enjoy that, but I would be a better contestant in that than I would the hot dogs.
I think I'd agree 100%. I mean, it is a tradition. I mean, hot dogs are a tradition on 4th of July, and seeing people eat a lot of them as well. But yeah, I think both of those are. My family doesn't like it, but I do. So like I will put it on. They're like, why do we have this on? Why did you turn off the Braves for this?
And secondary question. Oh, well, we will turn on the Braves because they're not fun to watch right now. But side note for that for just a moment. Are you a fireworks fan?
Yes. Are there people that aren't fireworks fans? You don't like fireworks? Please explain your take.
I hate fireworks.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think they're cool to look at, but
are you scared of the sounds?
I am. I am scared of. I'm scared of the noises. It's really loud. It hurts my ears. Yeah. No, I don't know. I've never been. It's not like I have past trauma either. It's not like I was 12 and had somebody aim a firework at me or anything, but
I've had that happen before.
I mean, Roman candles are one thing, but
okay, Roman candles are one thing. Now there's been some incidences where we've almost
incidences.
So we had this time. There's a video of it somewhere. I'd have to find it for you, but we were trying to launch a firework, and this is peak teenage boys during summer. We put it in a bottle, and then it falls over. And shoots towards my friend's house. We were on the other side because I was at the one friend's house, and then our other friend lived across the street. Our other friend that lived across the street, his family was really into diving. They had all of their oxygen tanks in the garage. It was maybe 50 yards from hitting those oxygen tanks. And then we decide, okay, you know what? We'll do it in the backyard so there's not a chance. The firework gets stuck in the ground. And lights the yard on fire. So we have to run in with like hoses and like stomp it down. And so there was like probably a 12 foot by 12 foot burn mark in my friend's backyard for like a month.
Heck yeah.
Just peak guys being dudes. It was so, I'll have to find the video. It got posted to World Star back in the day because we videoed it, and our friend was like a YouTuber because that's why we videoed it. And he still does YouTube, funny enough. And, it got posted to World Star, and everyone was like, and of course they decided to post it like it's like early 2020, and there was like the Australian bushfires, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. They posted in the middle of that, so like the comments are just wailing on what we did, and I filmed the video, so you don't see me, but you hear me go running.
You hear you giggling.
Yes, I mean giggling as a 16-year-old boy, but yes, it was so funny.
Oh man, well. See, there you go. That's that right there is actually the reason that I'm not a big fireworks fan.
I think they're cool. Like I think they're cool to look at, like if there's like a cool one, but again, I don't like the if you ever go to a fireworks show, they never start on time. It's always all right, they're supposed to start at 9 and the first one doesn't get shot off till like 9:30, and so everyone's like waiting in suspense for 30 minutes like, is this going to be cool? Yeah. Is this going to be cool?
For the grand finale to halfway meet expectations.
Oh, that is kind of lame. If it doesn't meet expectations, but when they do, Chef's kiss.
Oh, man. Well, a team that has not seen any fireworks recently. In fact, they have seen the fewest fireworks of all the teams in Major League Baseball. The Atlanta Braves, who are enjoying a lot of losing right now. The Braves have lost 13 of their last 17 contests. And a double-digit lead over the Phillies in the NL East early on in the season now sits at 2.5.
That's so crazy that a couple months ago we would sit here and talk about like the idea that, man, this Braves team is historic. They are the NL East, man. We don't have to worry. We can go ahead and write this thing off in July and August because there's no way that the Phillies down that are at the bottom of the division are going to catch us. There's no way that the Mets are going to catch us, and that is held true. There's no, you know, maybe the Marlins can or the Nationals, one of them will be decent enough, but there's we're not worried about Philadelphia. And then they got red hot and we went ice cold, Christian. And it's not because not the pitching. The pitching's been good enough, manageable. It's this team can't score a run to save their life.
No, their run differential used to be a whole lot of fun. I believe it was the top of the MLB. It now sits at plus 86, which is still a relatively decent number. Funny enough, the Phillies are plus 6 in run differential, but the Braves 3-7 in their last 10, the Phillies 7-3 in their last 10, and the Marlins, don't look now, but they're 8-2 in their last 10. They only sit 4.5 games back. They're also 46-40, so sitting above 500. The Nationals are also a game above 500. They're 7 games back of the Atlanta Braves right now, and you could take this of two ways, and I guess I'll let you decide the route that you are choosing to take because I don't necessarily have one. It was just on the spot thought of you almost hope that this is the Bruce Pearl Auburn basketball of the past of, man, you get the lead and your pitching is still decent enough, aka your defense is still good enough to where, although you're not scoring,
They're not scoring,
and although the Phillies have quote-unquote scored, again, you've cut the lead to 2.5. After this terrible stretch of June, you're still in the lead to where it's like, okay, now you go back to if you can get some guys healthy, if Ronald Acuna could come back and make it to where, okay, it's an enjoyable baseball team to watch again, and then you get the outings that you need from guys on the mound, then you start seeing your normal baseball again. Or are you beginning to be at the point of, oh no, now I truly understand what Philly fans and what Mets fans have understood over the last handful of years of
the shakedown.
The Braves, they start off below 500. This division's over. And then all of a sudden, oh no, they start getting closer. No, it's fine. I'm not worried about it. And then before you know it, the division is lost.
Yeah, I can't really say that I'm in the camp of season is over. You know, season's about to be over. And you look at the defense. They're still third in runs allowed. They're still third in batting average allowed. They're still third in total bases allowed. They're still top 10 in every defensive stat. It's the hitting that's been average to below average with a 15th OPS, 16th total bases, 12th in home runs for an offense that seemed like everyone was hitting home runs. Dubon was hitting home runs. Dominic Smith, we needed a statue in the Delta parking lot at Truist Park. But then you look and 30th in the past month, 29th in the past week, looking at the past 10 games, you've only won one series. And it was the Brewers in which you scraped by one run games at home in two of those three contests. In the third, you lost by 5 runs. I mean, and that's only two of your only 3 wins. It was so crazy a month and a half ago was, man, the Braves are legit because they beat the Brewers. They beat the Cubs. They beat the Dodgers all in like a row.
Yeah. And it was, they had not lost a series yet
until June.
Yeah.
And then they lose everyone in June. And that's such a frustrating thing to look at because they can be, and you look at around the division, the Nationals still haven't quite put it together yet. The Mets are the Mets. I see Barstool's Frank the Tank. I mean, they had, 6 errors in one game last week. He was having a meltdown. They fired their manager. Marlins are going to Marlin, and they're a young team, and you were on that early. I will give you a lot of credit. You were on them early saying, hey, this is not a team that the Braves could just walk in and expect to be a walkover team in the division. But then the Phillies, a team that had fired their manager, get the Don Mattingly to be the head man in Philadelphia, and suddenly they are the best team in baseball. I am worried about the Braves. I still think that they are at their floor, a wild card team. But I think for what Brian Snitker was able to do during his prime run, for what the Braves expect, Braves fans expect you finish and you add yourself another little flag in the right field, near the right field, near the cow out there with a number or a 2026 division champs banner.
Yeah, a little pennant. And Walt Weiss spoke with reporters before the game a couple of days ago and revealed that an All-Star break return or a pre All-Star break return for Ronald Acuña would be a very, very long shot. And Grant McCauley tweeted out on the 30th, the Braves have Ronald Acuña on a running progression, but remain cautious to see his return from the IL. It'll be a long shot if you see him before the All-Star break, which I think is perfectly fine. The All-Star break's in a couple of weeks. I don't think that by any means you're at the point of rushing him yet, because after the All-Star break is when you're going to have your big time series in the division especially. But you go back, and these are stats that are listed out from our good buddy Lindsey Crosby over at Braves Today in the Locked On Braves postcast. The Braves scored 77 runs in the month of June. That is 30th. You know how many teams are in the MLB?
Until they add teams in Las Vegas and Charlotte, 30.
That is 10 below the next team. They hit 19 home runs, which is 30th. You know how many teams are in the MLB?
Well, obviously I forgot about the A's moving to Las Vegas, so I think maybe we'd look at maybe an Oakland or like a Nashville for a team, which I hope they don't, truthfully. But 30.
Cool. Yep. You're doing good. You're acing this test.
Okay.
Batting average. They hit .213. 30th.
Okay.
OPS, .599. 30th. Total bases, 249.
Show me
30th.
Okay.
Yep, which is 36 below the team in 29th.
Golly.
And
that's four runs. I mean, that's that's 9 runs effectively.
Indirectly,
yes.
Yeah, which goes to show you why they've scored 10 below.
Or 36 singles.
Very nicely done. Mm-hmm. Nicely done, sir. Yeah, so safe to say, the Braves are not having a good time, nor are the Braves fans inside of Truist Park, or just the Braves fans having to watch the Braves right now, which does lead us into our text box of Austin Riley is horrible. And that is the text that I did receive at the 3 o'clock hour, and it's hard to disagree with things like that. What is the...
I'm pulling up his numbers right now. I mean, looking.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. Don't break your phone.
Okay. All right. 207, so barely above the Mendoza line, batting average. Home runs, or hits, sorry, 62. That is 126th among qualified players. Only 8 home runs, 37 RBIs, an OP.
Holy cow.
An OPS of 619. He's only made it to on 100 bases. And if you look at the unnamed sports app that I'm using that ranks kind of players, in the past 7 days, he is the 689th player.
Heck yeah.
In terms of like his overall like stat score, fantasy score, whatever. In the past 30 days, he's the 418th, and this season 140th. So let's do some quick math right here, right? So every team has a third baseman. So that's 30 third basemen. That is obviously you have other position players and pitchers above that. So you have 9 guys on a baseball field. 140 divided by, 140 divided by 9? That is 15. So he is like, if you were to like rank each team like the best first baseman, the best on the team 1, the best second baseman on team 2, he would be on team 15 or 16. this is not good enough for a team that's trying to compete for and win a division and go and win a World Series.
No, for a team that has the seventh most difficult strength of schedule remaining, their remaining schedule has a record, or I guess a win percentage of 510. So above 500, you then, where are the Phillies at? The Phillies are kind of right behind them. They're at ninth at 508. And so obviously those two teams are making it to where their records are much more difficult. The Braves have three with the Dodgers, three more with the Brewers, three more with Tampa Bay. They have seven more with the Philadelphia Phillies. They have three with the Yankees, three with the Cubs. Those are listed as their toughest opponents. The Braves do still have 10 with the New York Mets as well, rather than the Phillies only have seven with the New York Mets. And so you're hoping that you don't have to sit there and start counting days, and you're hoping that before long you'd love to be able to have one of those magic numbers posted all over the stadium for what they need to do to clinch everything. But safe to say the Braves are not doing too well right now, and not that it makes things a whole lot better when talking to Braves fans. For somebody that the Braves were upset with, and the Lady Braves fans were very upset with, of Dansby Swanson leaving, who's really struggled all season long until he had like 13 RBIs in a series, and he had like nine of them in one day. I don't know what he's doing, but he may be the hottest hitter in the MLB. He hit two home runs last night. He has three today. He just hit a grand slam. Wow. Yeah, so Dansby Swanson may be the hottest player in the MLB right now. And you can clip that for me talking about his statistics and not his looks.
All right. I mean, if you didn't say that, I would not have thought that you were not talking about his statistics. So,
well, regardless, we got to get the break. We do it, unless you have one final thing you want
to. Well, I was just looking at you said the magic numbers, and I found a website that gives all the magic numbers as of right now. The Braves are the top team that does not control their own destiny. If they want to be the number one seed, if they want to be the number two seed in the playoffs, they need 78 win. 78 is the magic number to win the number two seed in there, and for the divisional winners, if they want to be the third one, 74. While the Phillies, 75. So,
I don't know. Those are a lot of numbers that I don't really know what you're talking about, to be honest.
Well, you know what? We'll get to break because,
most importantly, you know, Braves need to start winning some baseball games. That's what I don't know a lot.
Yes, that's correct.
But that is one thing that I do, in fact, know. We will take a break. We will quickly come back and wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
I have an update on why Dansby Swanson is playing the way that he is. The Cubs are up 23-3 at home over the San Diego Padres. 23-3.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive. They scored eight runs in the home half of the eighth, where Dansby Swanson again homered for his third of the afternoon. He hit two last night. 14 days ago, he was hitting 170. He is now up to 210, which isn't a crazy number, but the fact that you saw that much rise in, what, 8-9 games of baseball,
it's impressive.
Relatively impressive, I would say so. But as was the show, had a lot of fun here this afternoon. Got to talk a lot of EA College football and the rankings, the stadium rankings. Got to shout out our guy Walker Kessler as well. And so a very, very fun show here this afternoon. One more for the remainder of the week. Again, no show on Friday. So tomorrow will be the final one of the week. And he's Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We'll be back tomorrow for the final time in the week to talk all about them. And we hope you'll be there to join us.